Good morning. Our subject this morning is quarry safety. A tragic incident occurred just over 2 years ago when a 16-year-old from Bath drowned at a disused Holcombe quarry, and since then there's been a spate of other quite serious but some minor incidents in the quarries in the area. The industry is properly concerned, and I'd like to welcome to the studio David Weeks, who is Hanson's Communications Manager. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Tell us, please, what is this safety initiative all about?
Well, every year the quarrying industry get together and launch a campaign, principally through the media, but also through the schools, to flag up the dangers to children of playing in quarries. It's something that we see as vitally important. It's one of the few areas where the quarrying industry does come together because we share the same problems and issues here. And of course, with East Mendip and the Froome area being such a strong quarrying area, we're having particular emphasis this year on the eastern half of the Mendips.
And how did the schools get involved, David?
Well, in two ways. Firstly, we visit the schools. Our quarry managers ring the schools and offer to do visits, come and talk to the children. We've also produced a video which features children's TV presenters, which they can associate with. And if they haven't got time to perhaps host a visit from one of our managers, they can at least show the children the video. In a way, we're caught between two stools here. And, you know, do we flag up quarries as being fun places to play and then say don't play? Or do we ignore it and think, well, maybe children don't play in them anyway? But and also, it's a job to know where to pitch the campaign. We tend to go in at the lower age groups, but we're finding actually now the problems are coming with teenagers and motorbikes. We need a catch-all solution. We haven't found it yet.
It's very interesting you should say that about quarries being a fun place to be, because I've been doing some research in Froome College and asking students why and if they do go and play in quarries. And, of course, it's a very hush-hush subject because most of them do so without their parents' permission. It's a sort of a... Yeah. It's the private area which teenagers find to do those things which parents are not supposed to hear about. You know, that's the main thing. The other thing that they said, which is very interesting, was that it's all a big adventure. There's a risk element there, which is interesting for them to actually partake in. I mean, how can we combat that, I wonder?
I don't know. We can probably all go back to our childhood and think we did things we shouldn't have done. And probably in our generation, we weren't necessarily told that we shouldn't be doing them. I think these issues are much higher profile now. And it's not just an accident waiting to happen. Accidents have happened. Tragedies have happened. And we just can't sit by and say, well, children will be children. We have to do all we can to keep the site secure. And having done that, we have to do all we can to work with the community to try and get them to understand. This isn't big stick business. This isn't saying, well, if you come in the quarries, you'll be disciplined, dragged away by your collar and locked up. We're saying when you go into there and when you go through that fence that may already have been broken down, think about the risks that you're facing. And we're trying to appeal to children to just stop and think, just for 1 minute to think about what they're doing and not simply say, well, the fence is broken down, so that's why I went in.
So why are quarries, what are the potential dangers? What are the real risks of children going into quarries?
There are two areas which we're concentrating on. One is the operating working quarry. There's big machines running around. There are vast open spaces. They are impossible to fence and keep secure. I mean, Whatley Quarry, for instance, is 4 miles around the perimeter. You simply can't put a fence that big and maintain it. There are footpaths all the way round, so there are people walking around. But the minute you climb over the screening banks, you're faced with huge 60-metre drops. And there's working machinery down on the quarry face, and that's the same with all the quarries in East Mendip. The other area we're aiming at is disused quarries. Now, disused quarries look like paradise. They are water-filled, and on a lovely hot summer's day, you can't think of anything better than plunging in. But the dangers are not, you can't see the dangers. There are rocks hidden under the water. The water, despite the air temperature, can be incredibly cold. And getting in's fine, but getting out's a different matter. We often have children who throw themselves in off 10-metre drops and then think, now how do I get out of here? And that's a big area where we're concentrating on. So you've got the water-filled disused quarries and you've got the working quarries. And there's probably another area, actually, which is the stockpiles of materials at working quarries, which the kids love to scramble up and get to the top and slide down. Great fun, but again, very, very dangerous.
What are the dangers there? What happens?
Well, these stockpiles can collapse. Mm. We had an incident at a sand wharf over in South Wales the year before last, where some teenagers were playing on the sand, and as it was being discharged onto the pile, they were sort of running underneath the sand, and one of them just got caught, knocked down, and just disappeared under a big pile of sand and was suffocated. Mm. These accidents don't happen very often. What we've got to do is stop them happening at all, and the only way to do that is to appeal to the police, to the communities, to the children, that you know, we've got to work together with this. We won't simply do it by putting out posters or having a letter in the Somerset Standard. We won't do it like that. We've got to try and appeal to people to understand, to parents to say, well, where are you going to play today? And to community within our quarrying communities, to, if they see children, to, you know, give us a ring or to say to them, you know, you shouldn't be playing there. Mm. Because you're right, we can't be the eyes and ears of the kids all the time. They need a bit of freedom.
Okay, well, let's move on now. In Froome College, I know that the initiative that we've taken on is to try and inform young people of the dangers of playing in quarries through a drama. So we're going to play now to you an excerpt from our soap, which is called Quantock. And in that soap, a teenager does come get into trouble in one of the quarries. So listen to the way we were dealing with it in that. Well, turning our attention now, David, to the disused quarries, which in your own words are a fabulous adventure playground, just waiting really in a sense to be exploited. I mean, who actually owns them when they're disused? Whose responsibility is it to maintain and look after them?
Well, the ownership is varied. Some quarry companies continue to own the sites because there could well be reserves of stone still left there that perhaps they want to go back to one day. Others are passed back to the original landowner. But the buck stops with the owner. If you own a disused quarry, you are responsible for maintaining its safety. And that means adequate fencing, putting up warning notices where they're required, and, you know, patrolling regularly to make sure that's all kept in place. And in a way, that's one of the biggest problems, because they tend to be in remote areas, remote rural areas. Access is difficult. And that's double-edged. It means they're difficult for us to keep secure, but they're even more attractive for people to go and use them as, you know, leisure areas.
How does it all go wrong then, David? I mean, if the owners are putting fences up, are patrolling and looking after the sites, how do these accidents ever happen?
What happens is that the sites get to be known as leisure spots. You know, we've even had websites where you can look up quarry sites where you can go for a swim and a sunbathe, and it's clear that this isn't children at work, this is adults. You know, they're circulating these sites where they can go, and the evidence that we find when the fences have been broken down, some of them have been attached by chains to vehicles and literally ripped out of the ground. You know, mm-hmm. 6-foot paling fences ripped out of the ground. Now, children aren't doing that. What's happening is the kids are then going in later, perhaps in the evening when the adults have gone home, when they're even more at risk. Mm. So we then have to go back the next day, re-erect the fences, check the security, only to have it torn down. There's an issue here in that there are people who believe it's their right to use these quarries. They're doing it at their own risk. They're quite they understand the risk, so why shouldn't they do it? Now, I've got some sympathy with that, not a lot, but some. But the problem is, that's fine. If you rip the fence down, would you please put it back when you go? Because we remain responsible for that.
Well, we'll pick up that point about people taking risks a bit more later on in the programme. Can we go back to the maintenance of security? I mean, what's the bill like for quarry companies to maintain security around a disused quarry?
Prior to selling Holcombe Quarry 2 years ago, we ran up a bill of close to £100,000 in 1 year on fence maintenance and security patrols. It's not simply the hardware and installing the fences. You then got to look after it, and so that means management time. But we also took a decision that because the problem was so bad at Holcombe that we would have security patrols during the evenings and at nights, which again costs money, and it's all got to be paid for by in our case the quarry owner. That's why we feel that the more effort we can put into an awareness campaign, the more payback there'll be generally. I mean, we will still get people who will see quarries as fun area, leisure area, disused quarries. But I did notice that this last year, 2004, we had, the problem was a lot less serious because word had got around that there'd been a very bad accident, a boy had died. It wasn't just PR hot air from the quarrying companies. These are dangerous places, and there were posters put up also at the sites, which helped us. They can't be policed, these sites. That's the problem, and so we have to do all we can to warn people of the dangers of playing in there or breaking in and using them as leisure areas.
Now, the boy who died, I understand, drowned while swimming. Is that the way, is that what happened?
Yes, it happened about 9 o'clock one evening when there'd been quite a few people in the quarry during the day, and but this boy and a friend and two girls had gone in during the evening, were the only ones there. Darkness was creeping up. It was sort of August time, and they got round to the top of the quarry and got into the classic situation where one jumps in the water and the other one's encouraged to follow, although the boy that got into difficulties couldn't swim. Now the details of the story probably will never emerge, but the fact is that a boy leapt from a 12 metre high quarry face and who couldn't swim. I have to cough, excuse me. Can we edit that out?
So, I mean, what happened? Did his friends try to help him? Under what circumstances?
It was a harrowing story where the boy who was in the water was encouraging his friend to jump, saying, and although he was saying, I can't swim, he said, don't worry, I'll get you to the side. And he can't have been any more than 2 or 3 metres from safety. But the second lad jumped in and immediately went straight to the bottom. When he did emerge back to the surface, spluttering, as people do when they're in trouble in water, he simply grabbed hold of the other boy and was pulling him down as well. And a situation arose where it was one boy couldn't swim and was panicking, the other one could swim and couldn't do anything about it, was panicking as well. And yet they were literally feet from safety. It was harrowing. Very, very difficult time.
Now, you mentioned earlier, David, that the water is extremely cold, especially, you know, just below the surface.
Yes.
Could you give me the science of that? Why is it so cold in these quarry ponds?
Because they are so deep. Some of the water is 20 to 30 metres deep. And as you get below the surface is warmed by the sun, but it's not like being at the seaside where the tide comes in, the water's relatively warm during the warm parts of the year. It tends to stay very cold down below.
I understand it's dangerous from things below the surface as well.
Yes, that's right, because often with old quarries that fill with water, some of the quarry spoil, the large boulders are pushed back into the water and can lie just below the surface. And although the water is quite clean, it's not necessarily that clear. You can't see what's lurking below the surface. And if you're leaping from 10 or 12 metres up, you're going to go down a long way. And we have had incidents where people have got tangled in rocks on the base of the quarry floor, got their foot stuck, and struggled to come back up again.
But one of the other ways that the college is trying to help with your safety initiative is by playing safety jingles between a popular music programme, which is going to be broadcast at lunchtimes. I'm going to play you a couple now to to see what you feel. The object of these, of course, is to treat the whole subject with the seriousness it deserves, but also in the sort of vogue and manner which young people would understand. So yeah. Here they come. David, during our break, I had a call from a Frome resident who said literally this. He said, well, the quarry industry digs these great holes in the ground, which none of us like. That was his own words. Why don't they fill them in again before they abandon them and leave them?
That's a good point. In the modern era, we have to explain what we're going to do with the quarry when it's finished before we can even start. But sadly, we're dealing with a heritage of holes in the ground that were dug, some of them 100 years ago, at a time when Mendip limestone, as it is today, was a very valuable commodity. But no thought was given to what was being left behind. And the problem areas tend to be the older quarries that are now long disused and can't be brought back into use again. That's the first point. The second one is that...
Can I just follow up something you said? In the modern quarrying industry, then, do you sometimes pledge to, for example, make a disused quarry into a leisure park or, you know, an Eden Vale sort of project?
Yes.
Is that the sort of thing you have to commit yourself to?
That's exactly it. And for the quarries at Muirhead and at Whatley, they both have very detailed, what we call restoration plans, which shows how, in the case of Whatley Quarry, it will be a massive reservoir, but with all the built-in safety features such as shallows at the sides and the opportunity for boating, if that's what people want, water storage possibly for the Bristol Water area. But all those, that plan, that detailed plan has been submitted and agreed, although it's 25 years down the line. So, and if it's decided that they want to change the use, that they want to do powerboat racing or, you know, turn it into some kind of leisure facility, then fine, that can be done. But that would have to go back to the planning committee for approval. Yeah. So everything's much more structured now and much stricter.
And does the quarry industry have to pick up the tab for that then?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The restoration of the site is entirely the responsibility of the quarry company. But it's these heritage sites that are the problems. Mm. The heritage sites where the difficulties arise. They're not necessarily big holes in the ground, and some of them still have reserves of stone within them. Not that it would ever be worked necessarily, but it still has an asset value on a company's books. Mm. So they keep it on, and they don't look at sort of some kind of restoration plan that would effectively sterilise the stone that's left. It's a difficult choice. The other issue is that because they're filling with water so rapidly and by natural processes means that they're no use for landfill. So filling them in isn't an option unless you go to extraordinary lengths to line them with clay and you know, a proper engineering solution. And quite frankly, I'm sure the vast majority of East Mendip residents would rather they filled naturally with water than that companies started importing rubbish and filling them with refuse.
Is it not possible to do half and half?
Not really, because again, the problem sites are in rural areas where the road network isn't suitable for taking stone out, therefore it isn't suitable for bringing stone back in. The other sites are so vast that you know, you'd be talking 100 years before you'd filled it. And again, it's far better to create a properly landscaped reservoir, where you can use the water for drinking or for leisure or for both, than it would be to have some kind of landfill site that's stretched years and years into the future. And the other thing, of course, is that as a society, we're trying to reduce the amount of waste we produce and the amount that we put to landfill. So, you know, we really should be looking to restore these quarries properly and responsibly and not just saying, well, they're big holes in the ground, so therefore let's throw all our rubbish in them.
It sounds a little bit to me as though it should be something things like the Lottery Fund or the Heritage Fund should be interested in that these amenities, albeit they be disused quarries with certain values you described, they are very attractive places for people to roam in the evening, for, as you say, teenagers to take their motorcycles and escape from the traffic on the roads, for, dare I say it, young people to walk hand in hand out of the sight of their parents, you know. I mean, that's what they are used for, aren't they? I mean, isn't there some way the quarrying industry could get themselves out of this the mess that they're in, really, and of course the tragedies which are occurring, by joined up thinking somewhere?
Yes, I take your point, and I think that we are doing, as an industry, making strides towards that. You may not be aware that every ton of stone that leaves the Mendip quarries, all the UK quarries, we pay £1.60 to the government in what they call the aggregates levy, effectively a quarry tax. Now, a proportion of that goes into what the government call a sustainability fund, and various organisations have the opportunity to bid for funds from there to look at all sorts of projects designed to reduce the environmental impact of quarrying. And one of the projects that we're looking at now is what to do with what we call orphan quarries, those quarries that no one seems to be concerned about and are not in operational use, and how those can be adopted or adapted for some kind of community use. I mean, one of the biggest questions I'm asked when we go forward with new plans for quarrying is, what happens to it at the end, and what benefits will it bring to our community? And so we have to be thinking ahead now and starting to look at how we can turn these, if they are wonderful play areas, well, let's turn them into safe play areas. Let's put design features into them that make them areas where we don't have to worry about security. Mm. That takes a bit of thought and a bit of commitment and, of course, some money.
But if you're spending over £100,000 a year on fencing them off, £100,000 would go a long way, wouldn't it, to improving the leisure amenities in a disused site?
Yes, it would. And one of the plans that we considered for one of our disused sites was to go back in there and use our skill and knowledge of blasting limestone and creating contours to remove all the steep faces, fill in the shallows and effectively create some kind of safe area where, you know, the risks were vastly reduced. That particular site was sold, and one of the uses it was put to was for training for sub-aqua for divers. Yes. So, of course, the plans we'd come up with weren't going to be possible. But again, in putting a diving school in there, you've got people there and you've got your built-in security. It's the sites when there's no one around.
So the obvious next question then, Dave, is, okay, so what are your plans for those heritage disused quarries in our immediate area to actually transform them into these useful leisure facilities in the future?
They're all in different ownerships, which doesn't help. The ones that are in my company's ownership, we're having a very close look at what we can do, what grants might be available to help us, because, you know, although we're in business, a lot of those quarries aren't producing anything for us, and so we're looking at getting some kind of help, possibly through this fund I was telling you about, drawn from the tax that our customers are paying, which is right that it should be. You know, we should get some benefits back to the communities who are affected by quarrying. And we're looking at other ideas as to what we might use the disused quarries for. I mean, they are classic brownfield sites. In that, you know, they're industrial sites in the countryside. So let's look at attracting other industries back, possibly to use those sites, because it's not just the hole in the ground. There's large areas associated with that where perhaps the crushing and processing equipment was, which might be ideal for other light industry. And again, when you've got sites occupied, they're a lot easier to police.
Now, David, I mean, we all know that your work is public relations for Hanson, so clearly you're painting a very persuasive picture on the positive way in which companies are trying to deal. What I'm searching for, though, is any indication of an infrastructure in place, of management, of concerned people, of government as well, local government with you, to bring about these highly attractive plans, I think, to convert these dangerous places into leisure or social amenities, or indeed, as you've just said, to promote new industries in the area. What is happening there?
There was an initiative within Mendip District Council a number of years ago now, which was focused just on this, about what we were going to do with these old quarry sites. It lost some momentum, but I believe there was an incentive last year to try and get it going again. Because of the value, potential value of these sites is for industrial development. We've also, as an association in the Mendips, we have the Mendip Quarry Producers Association. You know, we've looked at various sites, including disused quarries, where we might put up some kind of educational facility, which is something that we're looking at with Somerset County Council. But there is no quick fix for this. There is no company set up to resolve it. You know, it's an issue that it's been out there a long time. I think for a long time we've ignored it and hoped it would go away. Now we're coming back and saying these quarries remain dangerous. But certainly the major companies in the Mendip are looking very closely now at what more they can do, because quite clearly simply repairing fences and putting up new signs every year isn't enough.
Do you think prevention is better than cure?
In some respects, yes. I think the truth is, if we weren't getting people breaking in and we weren't getting accidents, we would simply leave the quarries and wouldn't be worried about them. So what's happened is that the series of incidents culminating in the tragedy 2 years ago. Incidentally, prior to that, a woman of about 35 broke her back having dived into the same quarry and had to be taken out by the air ambulance. And that was because the ambulance itself couldn't get there because of the number of parked cars in the lanes. So, you know, the it's worked up towards a situation where we're aware of the problem, but we know now that we've got to look for a cure.
David, in your long work with the quarrying industry, clearly one of the most shocking things is when you do get these serious accidents occurring, and it must rouse in you, as it does in all of us, a sense of sort of, you know, the humanity of the whole thing, the danger of the whole thing. But surely, I must ask you, you would prefer, wouldn't you, to set your guys at work in converting a disused quarry rather than sending them off to repair fences which are going to be ripped down again?
Yes, of course, but the problem with the majority of the disused quarries is that they still have an asset value. You know, there is still stone reserves there. And so there's a reluctance to write that off and simply say, oh, well, it'll never be needed, or we can't get to it because the road access isn't good enough. And that's not just the quarrying companies. That's also the county councillors, the Mineral Planning Authority, has to keep an eye on the mineral reserves and how they're being protected. And if, for instance, we decide to turn a quarry with 40 million tonnes of stone reserves into a leisure centre and effectively write off the reserves, that might be fine by us, but the county council has a duty to provide a certain tonnage of minerals.
But do the county council help you to keep them secure?
No, but what I mean is we wouldn't be able to sterilise that rock, because it would mean having to look somewhere else for future reserves.
Tell us more about the demand for rock and minerals in the area. Does it remain constant? Is it still increasing, decreasing? What is going on in the quarrying industry?
You think you need to understand where Somerset features in the national picture. It's a very important strategic source of hard rock. If you draw a line from the Wash, Lincolnshire, down to Weymouth, everything southeast of that line, London, South East, East Anglia, there are no indigenous sources of hard rock. There are no quarries. That's simply the geology of the island. And so Somerset and Leicestershire in particular have a very important strategic part to play in getting stone into London and the South East, where demand's high because there's a lot of building work going on, there's a lot of people. And the way we do that is that the main Somerset quarries are rail linked, and a lot of the material goes out by train. And so they're extremely important strategic sources, and Somerset has a big part to play in providing, you know, a natural resource and exporting it to other counties. Demand is pretty constant. It's fallen off by about a third in the last 10 or 15 years. And it's currently at something around 10 or 11 million tonnes a year being produced in Somerset. And probably three quarters of that is going out by rail up to London and the South East. The reason demand's falling is that we're not building roads, big scale road schemes anymore. There aren't any huge civil engineering projects like the Second Severn Crossing or the Mall at Cribbs Causeway. And that's all driven by the economy. The whole industry tends to follow the trends of the economy. It's totally demand-led. You know, we can't go out and sell our product. I mean,
what lies behind my question is, okay, so is there really a need with that, you said 33% drop in recent years, is there really a need to reserve these pockets of assets in disused quarries? I mean, can you anticipate that at some stage we're going to need those too?
It's a question of thinking long term. The county council has a 10-year land bank, so they've got to be looking ahead and saying, for the next 10 years, they've got that, whatever Somerset is delivering or required to deliver by the government, they can see where that's coming from. But yes, I can see a point where we all agree that some of these sites are not suitable and never will be. And we need to look to other sites. There is a process for doing that. It's called the review of old mineral planning permissions. And that's something that we've been through with several of our sites and effectively said, OK, we hand in the planning permission. And when that happens, we then are duty-bound to say, OK, well, what are you going to do with the site? And that's where the modern planning conditions come in.
OK, well, let's get back to the human tragedy and the waste of these young lives when these terrible accidents happen. What's your legal liability to youngsters and their parents if an accident of this sort happens?
Excuse me. We have to do all we can to make the site secure, and we have to demonstrate that we have done all we can and gone to all reasonable lengths to keep the site secure. So we have to make sure there's adequate fencing, make sure there is adequate notices up there that are visible, and do periodic checks to ensure that it's kept in good condition and everything's working properly. It's a huge responsibility. And inevitably, when people get into the sites, when they're playing on the sites, they haven't broken a fence down. They haven't seen a sign because it's already been thrown in the water. Mm. And so the liabilities there are, you know, there is potential there for the company to be liable. On the other side of the coin, if you send one of our quarry managers out when he's, you know, break-ins reported or a fence is down, he then has to do all he can to try and explain to the people who've broken in that they're in danger and to leave the site.
How often are these disused sites inspected by you then?
Daily, the ones at this time of year, and it's important that they are. This is a seasonal problem. Mm. We don't get people swimming in the quarries in January.
Skating there.
It is a very seasonal problem, and at this time of year, we're constantly patrolling. And it's important that we should.
Do young people try to have raves in these quarries?
There've been a couple of incidents where they've been planned and the quarry's been earmarked as a venue, but they've never happened. I don't really understand how these things work, but words got around.
I think it's the marvels of the internet these days.
Yes, thanks.
Mobile phones.
Words got around that rave's happening and here's the venue. But we haven't had a situation where that's happened. No, the biggest issue we're facing now, other than the waterfall quarries, is motorbikes.
Yeah, talk to us about that. I mean, why do youngsters take their motorbikes into quarries?
What better place to to run your motorbike, particularly if you're not allowed on the roads on it? And in a lot of cases, it's, you know, going back to what we said, well, let's create something. Right? Mm. Do you remember when skateboards came in and they were awful? They were on the pavements everywhere. So now we've got these wonderful skateboard paths because someone said, well, look, instead of saying don't do it, let's create an area where you can do it.
Well, why aren't you doing that?
The costs of patrolling, you know, keeping it secure. You need a proper organised scrambling club where you've got people who are there if someone... I mean, the biggest problem we've got is not the children, the teenagers on their motorbikes, it's when someone falls off and needs help or you know, goes into an area they shouldn't be in.
Mm.
And so, but we've got to understand also that we're a quarrying company. We're not providing leisure facilities. And so our responsibility is to get the materials out the ground, keep the site secure, and keep trespassers out. And we're always willing to talk to people about imaginative ways in which we can restore or reclaim old sites. But we would stop short, I think, of saying, well, you know, let's charge £10 a head and open it up to motorcyclists and, you know, have people patrolling.
It would lead to a huge expansion of the quarrying industry. I'm sure you could branch off into holiday camps and leisure industry. No, I mean, I can see that that would be fairly impractical. But, I mean, I assume in the new quarry schemes which you've told us about, that when you sell on a disused site or when you let go of the reins as such, presumably leisure companies move in and buy the rights from you, do they? Mm. Or and that package is set up. Isn't there a possible future in some of these dangerous and disused sites in a leisure company responding to a partial initiative from you, shall we say, to create a motorcycle track or something, where somebody could actually, yes, earn their pounds as well with their £10 fees and their patrols and help for motorcycles? Isn't that a possibility, David?
It's a possibility. The problem is the economics, and I don't think anyone's yet found a plan that is going to break even, never mind make a profit. And that's the issue, that a lot of work would be required on these sites to convert them into something that was suitable for leisure use. You then have quite extensive overheads in maintaining them and keeping them safe and monitoring them. So you'd then be in a position where you'd have to charge some kind of admission for use. And getting a return on that investment is not easy, because otherwise all those sites would now be, you know, that's what the use they'd be put to. Someone would have identified it as an opportunity. I mean, it is an opportunity, but it would need a fair bit of support, I think, financial support, for it to be viable.
You see, which leads me back to what's troubling me throughout all of our discussions here now, because if that's possible with your news sites, where you're bound to actually provide these facilities, why isn't it possible with the older ones which are providing these dangers?
You see, we have the advantage with a new site of being able to effectively engineer in the final design as we go along. In some of our sand and gravel sites, as you go up the M4 towards London, the Reading area, we've been able to create areas for water skiing, create areas for fishing, create areas for sailing, and within the complex of lakes have nature conservation areas where you leave islands in the lakes so that birds can breed and be safe. Because you're effectively on a clean piece of paper and you're designing a quarry with your end game in sight. What we're dealing with here is, I go back to the fact that for the last 100 years, it's simply, you know, go down as deep as you can and as wide as you can, and don't worry about the hole that's left. I mean, there are some pretty horrific examples of...
I'm sure there are many parents and many youngsters who should be worrying about those dangers, and thank you very much for launching this safety initiative in the area. We hope here in Froome College, and I'm sure in all the other schools in the country involved in the campaign, will have some sort of impact on letting youngsters know the dangers and letting them make a risk assessment, I suppose, on what they're up to there. In the meantime, thank you very much indeed, and and good luck to you in the future.
Thank you.
Okay.